Hey everybody, welcome again to another fine episode of F This Movie, the movie podcast that sucks. My name is Patrick Bromley, and I am joined tonight, once again, by Mr. Alex Lawson. How are you, sir?
I'm doing fine. I want to address something. We are a podcast that has our roots in the Chicagoland area, So I feel comfortable making this analogy. When Michael Jordan retired from the NBA in 1993 and subsequently returned a year and a half later
to play there with were people Bugs who Bunny thought, and Tweety Bird.
Yeah. Okay. There were people who thought that it wasn't actually a retirement at all and that he had been suspended for his notorious gambling habits.
Okay.
Now, I'm not going to say to everybody out there that I'm not going to say that Patrick suspended me from the podcast for saying on here that I enjoyed Wild Wild West. I'm not going to say that that's what happened, and that sort of explains my absence here. But I'm not going to say that that did not happen. And I'm going to leave it to the enterprising young fans, or old fans, I suppose, of F This Movie to maybe, I don't know, figure out pull back that curtain or whatever.
Yeah.
But regardless, I am back. I'm back. I sent Patrick a two-word fax this morning. It just said, I'm back.
Wow. That conspiracy theorists run with that one. You know, I actually put Wild Wild West in my Netflix instant queue
to
revisit it based on the fact that you said you liked it, but I have not had the courage yet to watch it. And I want to address something as well. You know, I started the show in a very self-deprecating way. I said, the podcast, it sucks. And the reason for that, here's a little behind the scenes of this movie. I don't know if you guys have noticed. I'm guessing you have. Usually when I open the show, I say, the podcast, that. And I don't put a ton of thought into it. So at the last second, I always remember the movie that we're doing. And I just make it a reference to the movie that we're talking about.
Sure, yeah. You said, even before we started this, you said you hadn't even thought of an intro yet. So
exactly.
He thinks of these things in fairly short order, people. He really does.
So I realized that we were doing Napoleon Dynamite. I'm sure there are quotes. I know people quote that movie all the time. I don't have any memorized. So I just went with us sucking, which should give you a fairly strong indication of my feelings about Napoleon Dynamite. But we will get to that later.
We have
all sorts of ground to cover. You haven't been on for a while. This Wild West thing is a bunch of hogwash, let me tell you, right now.
Yeah.
But there was no suspension, everyone. Okay.
Well, I mean,
just be careful what you say you like on this episode. That's all I'm saying.
If you want to take the there was no suspension from the mouthpiece of F This Movie, that's fine. If you want to take that at face value, that's fine. That's your prerogative as a listener. We're not here to air dirty laundry here on the podcast in front of everybody. I'm happy to be back here.
I'm happy that you're back. With so much ground to cover. So F This Movie you can find in the iTunes store by searching F This Movie, and you could subscribe to us through iTunes. And if you do and you like our show, please leave a comment down below. You can find our website at fthismovie.blogspot.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fthismovie, and you can become a fan of ours on Facebook at facebook.com/fthismovie. And you can email us with suggestions, which we will get to again in a second, at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Here's another thing I have to cover, because this is officially the last show of September. Before we get into Scary Movie Month on F This Movie.
Yes.
And because we're kicking off Scary Movie Month in a slightly unorthodox way, and you will see why this weekend, this show will go up probably Wednesday or Thursday if you're listening to us through DVD Verdict. This weekend, go to fthismovie.blogspot.com and you will see how we kick off Scary Movie Month. But I won't have time to address some of these things, so I'm going to do it now.
Okay, go for it.
One of the things
I don't even know how we're going to kick off. I mean, I'm part of the crew here.
Yeah,
I don't
no,
even
it's,
know.
It's a fun little surprise. But you know, last year at F This Movie, we did this thing called the F This Movie F Horror Movies Challenge, and we're doing it again this year. Except this year, I think I'm going to call it F Scary Movies Challenge because I like scary movies. I like the way that sounds better because it sounds more childish. And let's face it, we're a bunch of children.
We are. All about that. Yeah.
So The F This Movie, F Scary Movies Challenge, Part 2, 2011 edition. What you do is you go watch any horror movie during the month of October. It can't be something you watched a year ago or even last week. During the month of October, anytime you watch a horror movie, log on to fthismovie.blogspot.com and find the post that says F This Movie, F Scary Movies Challenge Part 2 or 2011 or whatever. You'll find the post. And in the comments section, you leave a 7-word review. No more, no less. 7-word review.
Is that what we did last year, too? I feel like it was 10 or something.
No, 7.
Oh, 7. Okay.
Good, I don't know why 7, but it seems good. I like.
Yeah, sure.
Like,
no, that's fine.
I like 7.
50 is good, yeah.
Last year, we got, our goal was to get over 100, and we got to 125. Yeah. So 125 different horror movies had 7-word reviews on the site last year. Obviously I would like to beat that this year. So we're shooting for 150 this year.
A fair target.
Yeah. We want to get to 150 different 7-word reviews during the month of October. So please, please participate. And, just like we did last year, we will sort of randomly select some on each show during the month of October and read them on the air. So put a ton of thought into these because obviously you want to get yours read on the air and become a famous, famous person mentioned on a movie podcast.
Did we ever scare up?
I see what you did. I see what you did.
Did we ever scare up a prize or anything for that person, or was it just the notoriety?
It was just the notoriety. Yeah, there were no prizes,
and that's fine. And that is more valuable than any currency.
Yeah.
I think.
We're working on some giveaways, though, some F This Movie related giveaways to coincide with we're coming up on 100 shows. I think this is number 80.
Yeah.
And I mean, let's face it, if this October is anything like last October, we'll get to 100
You'll
in
probably,
a month.
Because, oh, yeah. I fear for your health. Really do.
Yeah.
Because it's not nearly as taxing on the rest of us. You made reference to this during your show with Doug on Superbad. Like, you have to do all of these.
Yeah, I sure do.
We're just hitching ourselves to your wagon.
Now, when you say hitching,
it's not a big tax on us.
When you say hitching, is that you saying that you like the movie Hitch?
That's me saying that you are that. I mean, we are Kevin James and you are Will Smith.
I'm just trying to get you to admit to liking another Will Smith movie.
Let's
see what happens. Yeah, I'm going to be trapping you for the entire show.
Well, I'm on my toes. So,
okay.
So
all right.
Your best shot. Okay.
I'm just saying.
Yep.
I'm trying to work a 7 pounds reference in and I can't.
Yikes.
Wasn't that what that movie was called?
Yeah.
Alternate title, Death by Jellyfish.
That's right. If you can swing a Legend of Bagger Vance reference in here, you might have me fall into the concealed bear pit or something. just a hint for you.
All right. Does it have to be a reference to the title, or can it just be a reference from that movie? Because I definitely remember Charlize Theron saying, like, "I miss the way we danced."
I don't.
I saw that trailer a lot.
The only reason. Okay, well, you already beat me to it. The only reason I know she says that is because I saw the trailer. I haven't seen that movie.
Can I tell you something? I liked that trailer. I was convinced that was going to be a good movie. I mean, that looks good. What magical black man helps Matt Damon golf? That's the worst idea for a movie I've ever heard. And why, in like 1998 or 99 or 2000, whenever that movie came out, I was convinced that it wasn't going to be horrible? I don't know. Chalk it up to youth and inexperience. Because that movie's not good.
No.
Alex, have you seen anything good lately?
I mean, I'm of two minds about this because it's been quite a long time since I was on the show, and I don't want the people to think that I, haven't been in movies in all that time. I have, a lot, but I don't want to, many of the things that I've seen in that intervening time have been things that have been discussed ad nauseum on the podcast.
Right.
And so we don't have to go over that again. I haven't seen a whole lot new, mostly because there's just not a whole lot I want to see. I still haven't seen Drive. I know. I mean, I really want to see it. Yeah, it's a shame. But mostly it's just because I've been so busy rewatching Wild Wild West.
Sure. It's on Netflix Instant, so just watch it as many times as you can. Did you see Moneyball?
I did not see Moneyball. I'm not like clamoring to see Moneyball because
I thought for sure you would want to see Moneyball.
Yeah, no, you'd think so, because I'm like the resident sports fan of this movie.
And the resident money fan as well.
True.
The rest of us don't care for currency. Not one bit.
No.
You're a regular Uncle Scrooge.
Yeah. I am actually of the opinion that I didn't care too much for that book.
Okay, I didn't read the book. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I've read the book a couple of times, and I actually really hate it. And when I saw the trailer, I wasn't really intrigued by it.
You hate the book, and you've read it a couple times?
Well, yeah, because, like, I mean, I thought, well, I should back up. I read it when I was, like, kind of young. I think I was in high school or something. And, like, I don't know, for those of you who don't know, it's got a lot to do with evaluating players based on – baseball players, that is, based on, like, complicated, like, math equations and – sort of outside the box thinking. And I thought maybe when I read it in high school or so, I wasn't, I wasn't like smart enough, or I wasn't like an evolved enough fan of sport to get it. So mm-hmm. I gave it another shot. Actually, I've read it like 1.5 times, I should
say. Okay.
And I've never been that interested. So I'm not like really clamoring to see it. I haven't seen a whole lot new. I have rewatched some things. One thing I want to talk about, I rewatched recently, and I think, although I can't remember if it made my final top 10 list of last year.
Or its initials WWW?
No. Come on now.
Oh, sorry.
That's enough of that. That made my top 10 list of
99,
yeah. Above Fight Club, above Magnolia, above American Beauty, all that stuff. It was a movie called Client 9, mm-hmm. The Rise and Fall of Elliot Spitzer.
Yeah.
I think I put it on my top 10 list, though now I can't remember.
I'm pretty sure you did.
I think I did. And I rewatched it again recently, and I want to talk about it because I didn't get to talk about it on the podcast at any point, and I happen to have watched it recently. If you haven't seen it, it's directed by Alex Gibney, who directed what's that movie called now? It's Taxi to the Dark Side, or Taxi Cab to the Dark Side, about the Abu Ghraib torture and, like, you know, sexual exploitation in Iraq.
Okay, so that's not the one with Jimmy Fallon and Queen Latifah.
Client 9 is really interesting. Obviously, it's about Elliot Spitzer and all that stuff he did, but I like it in the there have been two high profile movies released recently about, you know, the economic woes of the United States, they being Inside Job, and which has been discussed on the podcast, and Michael Moore's Capitalism: A Love Story. And I actually think that Client 9, weird as it is, because it seems sort of exploitative and perverse, because it's about this guy's like torrid sexual affairs with prostitutes, it actually serves as an interesting like companion piece to those movies about the economic crisis, because it's actually mentioned a little bit in Client 9. And while it makes no apologies for the things that Elliot Spitzer did to his, you know, his wife and his family and deceiving the people who trusted him, it does sort of target sort of the human nature of that whole scandal, because he was the person who was supposed to like clean up Wall Street and, you know, set all that in a correct way. And obviously he had his own problems and vices, but it's hinted that they were exploited in such a way to prevent him from accomplishing the bigger goals of his political career. But anyway, it's really great. I mean, it's been out for, it's not new or anything if you haven't, but I feel like it wasn't really like widely acclaimed or even really talked about that much. But if you haven't seen it, you should definitely check it out.
It's on Netflix Instant, yeah?
I believe so, yeah.
That's how I saw it.
I have seen it.
I liked it. I liked it. I did, and I agree with some of what you're saying in terms of like Elliot Spitzer was sort of predicting some of these things that were about to go down. And it was interesting just to sort of get a version of exactly what happened. And it's depressing because here's a guy, depending on which way your politics lean, if you're sort of left leaning, you know, Elliot Spitzer was a guy that you could sort of look up to and seem to walk the walk. And so it's depressing to see him brought down by his own actions. And of course, it's not just his own actions. Obviously people are sort of conspiring to bring him down, but the documentary kind of failed at examining, because it's obvious that Spitzer is very uncomfortable talking about the sort of sexual side of the whole story. Yeah. And so the movie kind of dances around it. And I think by not getting into it more, and by not having him be sort of more open and honest about the whole thing, it doesn't present a full picture of him, if that makes sense, because he's obviously
a little like, go ahead.
I think he's, you know, fairly complex in terms of, like, you hear him talk about wanting to bring down corruption. He's very idealistic politically, and very smart. But
yeah,
but I think it's pretty one-sided.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't, obviously it had, I mean, you know, he's in the movie quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's, you know, featured in a prom. I'm talking about as an interview subject.
Right.
And, I guess you are correct in saying that it's sort of in lieu of disclosing a lot about his, you know, sexual, you know, proclivities. It just sort of talks about the things that sort of went into it. But I feel like if it is one-sided, I think it only serves to prove as a, you know, an opposing side to a side that had already been well established in the news media and other things, like, you know, just like, here's this bad guy who, you know, had affairs with all these prostitutes, and then there was a little more behind it.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
What I mean?
Yeah, no, and I definitely agree with that. I guess I just want to know. I don't want to know, like, details or anything like that. I just want to know. Like,
that's what it sounded like. It sounded like you wanted to know whether or not he left his socks on.
I was looking for reenactments. I guess.
Which is a question the movie answers, by the way, about his
socks. And you know what's so fascinating, too? Did I misunderstand this in the movie that it. The really famous prostitute who, like, was on MySpace and had a recording career, Ashley Dupree.
Right.
Doesn't it come out in the documentary that they only had sex one time?
One time.
Yeah, see, that, if nothing else, like, that's a crazy misconception.
Too. That's what really stuck with me. I was just like, there's just this whole, like, sea of things that I don't understand.
Misinformation.
I just
felt like, obviously, there's more than just one thing driving him. And I felt like it doesn't acknowledge his demons. He comes out looking great, you know, even though he's the guy who, like, visited prostitutes and whatever. He comes out looking great and kind of like a victim. And that's fine because, again, because of the way I lean politically, like, that's the movie I want to see. But I feel like as an honest, objective documentary, I thought it fell a little short. That's all.
Yeah.
What else?
I mean, I don't know how much it portends, or, you know, to be an objective thing rather than just telling this other side of it. But we can go back and forth on this. As far as new things, I mean, the last thing I saw in theaters, gosh, I think it goes back to, like, I don't know, Rise of the Planet of the Apes or something.
Yeah.
Which my feelings on that are probably pretty in line with yours and have been discussed on this podcast about how it's a little bit.
It's fine.
Probably better than it had any right to be, and all that. And I will say that I have yet to have a movie this summer. Well, I mean, the summer's over now, but like actually have a legitimate. I'm not being hyperbolic. A legit hair stand up on my neck moment. And there's the first. I mean, gosh, I feel like so many people have seen it, but I still won't spoil it. But there is the one thing, and it comes after the. Awful reiteration of the Charlton Heston line, the one moment where the monkey does something that he's not normally inclined to do. There's something really sort of affecting to me about the way that was pulled off. But
we were in very different places during that moment, apparently. Because,
oh, man, I thought it was great. Oh, well, anyway.
No, it's
but,
fine.
I mean, we have to rehash all those discussions.
Yeah,
I mean, because that's been done to death on here. We don't have to go back into that. But anyway, I mean, I'm really out of the loop on a lot of things. I have to be caught up, and I promise when I appear in October, I'll have some more to bring to the table. But what have you seen?
I saw Drive. I was looking forward to talking about that with you, but you know,
well, sorry. You were shaking your head at me when I said I hadn't seen it. I'm sorry.
It's good. It's really good. That's why I want you to see it. You know, the problem is I hesitate to sort of talk it up too much because I think it's already been built up too much. I think it can only have a bad effect at this point, that people go into it expecting greatness. And it wasn't so great. That kind of happened to me for Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and I don't want to do that to somebody with Drive. I don't think...
That said, you think it's fucking awesome.
The best movie of the decade. The best movie since Wild Wild West. I don't think, you know, the thing about it is it's not reinventing the wheel. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Whatever your feelings are about Inception, audience, not you. When I saw Inception, I was like, that was so good because A, it was extremely well made, but also it showed me things I'd never seen and it had these ideas and all that. Drive is not that kind of movie. Drive is a movie that is made by the direction and it's very, very stylized. And he makes a lot of big choices. And if you don't like the choices he makes, you're not going to like the movie. But if you do, you're going to love it because, you know, from a story standpoint, there's nothing in the movie that you haven't seen a bunch of times. It's a very familiar story. I mean, the dialogue is good. It's very well acted. The cast is good, but it's really Nicholas Winding Refn's show. He definitely is the star of that movie. And I thought it was really, really good and solid. And it's just been, you know, kind of a bummer year. I worry that I'm going to be guy who says that every year, but like, I feel like this year has been kind of a bummer, and so it was really cool to see something like, wow, somebody really had a vision and really executed it here. Because I feel like it's been a while since we saw something like that at the movies. And I saw Moneyball, and I was, again, looking forward to talking especially with you about that, because I was curious what your thoughts on it were.
We'll touch on it next time. We definitely will. We'll definitely touch on it next time.
Because I wasn't super excited to see it, but I ended up going to see it just because the screenplay is by I'm gonna mess up his name. Steve Zalin. I don't know. He's written a bunch of good stuff.
Yeah.
And Aaron Sorkin, and I was like, well, how could I not go see it? And for the first hour or so, you definitely get that sort of Aaron Sorkin vibe where everybody's talking fast and everyone is smart and knows what they're talking about. And it doesn't even matter. Like, if you're not into baseball, if you're not into Facebook, like, Aaron Sorkin has a way of writing stuff that, like, is interesting, even if it doesn't matter what they're talking about. And then
he did that for 7 years with The West Wing and politics. I mean, people who don't know anything about policy or politics watch that show and loved it.
The first hour is great. And then the second hour I felt like settles into a sort of conventional sports movie where we're worried about like the big game and are they going to win and blah, blah, blah. It feels overlong, I thought. It drags at points. Well acted and always, you know, smart and interesting. And it's one of these movies, and I've said this a couple times on the podcast about specific movies, but like Moneyball should be the baseline. Every movie should be as good as Moneyball, and then great movies should be better than Moneyball. But like, it's so, well acted, so it's well directed, it's engaging. That's what every movie should be.
So Moneyball is this year's The Town for you. Perhaps. Is what you're saying.
I mean, I think I ended up liking The Town a little bit more, maybe because it was just about bank robbers and guns and cool shit, you know, whereas Moneyball is about statistics and baseball.
Some of us played Little League as kids. Patrick robbed banks. We all bring different things to the table.
Because you're a baseball fan, though, I was interested to hear like your thoughts on the movie, because it does present sort of two very different ideas, and I don't know if the movie ever really decides what it wants to be, because, you know, it makes a point of saying like we over romanticize that sport in America, and maybe we shouldn't, but then the movie goes about romanticizing it, and so maybe it's trying to say like, no, it's a great game and we love, and here's why we romanticize it, but I don't buy into that shit. I liked it better when it was like this weird theoretical thing. I thought, oh, here's a sports movie that's coming at it from a different angle, but you didn't see it, so there's a giant mechanical spider at the end. Does that entice you at all?
I mean, it's definitely not hurting. I mean, you're getting me closer to them tearing my ticket in half there.
Did you hate the book because you hate the entire like ideology that it's sort of, that this whole thing is founded on?
Well, I mean,
are you opposed to the practice of Moneyball?
Well, I mean, people who are listening to the show who like know about baseball, and maybe that's a very small sect of our audience, if it exists at all, know that like the book and sort of thought process spurred by the book has changed the way people evaluate talent in the game. But when you come right down to it, the Oakland A's like didn't win shit. Like they didn't. It was really weird. Like this was a guy who like applied these different, like, you know, theories to like getting these players to make a competitive team, and they never really won anything. They never went to the World Series. I think they went to the championship series, which comes before the World Series, once when I was in college or so. But the whole thing, when you step back and look at it sort of big picture in a macro perspective, rings a little false. But I am still going to see the movie because it definitely looks like I'm excited to see Brad Pitt in that role. And I haven't said that about a Brad Pitt movie in a while, probably since Inglourious Basterds, mostly because it looks like one of those roles that some actors take every couple of years. This happened with Jerry Maguire it happened with Tom Cruise and Jerry Maguire, mm-hmm. where it's just like the movie literally is a platform for that actor to just be larger than life for
right.
2 hours.
It's just, it's a movie star part, you know?
Exactly. Right. It's a movie star role. There are a couple other examples.
And Brad Pitt, in my opinion, is almost always fails in those roles.
I agree.
He's always
yeah.
interesting
yeah.
and great in the weird character parts, but in the movie star parts, the yeah, Meet Joe Blacks and the Legends of the Falls and the 7 Years in Tibets and the Curious Case of Benjamin Buttons always fails. And this, I don't think he fails. He's good. He's fun to watch. He's like normal, you know, he doesn't Johnny Depp it up with like weird
yeah,
eccentricities.
Yeah, yeah. There's no like, there doesn't appear, and I'm just going from the trailers and the things I've seen. I mean, there doesn't appear to be like a hook.
Right, he doesn't have a bunch of ticks, but like, he's really good. And every once in a while, I actually could hear some Aldo Rain slipping in, where he's like squinting and he kind of does this drawl. And I'm like, what is he? Oh, that's, he's doing Aldo Rain. I don't know if he's doing that on purpose, but.
Maybe he'll never, maybe that's just ingrained in him. And maybe that's not a bad thing for
yeah.
the rest of us.
And Jonah Hill actually is really good. And
really? Because like that is a thing that also did not have me rushing out to see. I was
Jonah
just like
Hill
that struck me as
a
weird casting choice.
He underplays everything, and
okay. Well, that's
good. Yeah, I mean, I was sitting
there
that's watching
a departure for him. Yeah.
I was sitting there watching and thinking about, oh boy, a bunch of other actors would be making all kinds of faces and reacting, and he doesn't. He just kind of he's just kind of blank, and it's good. He's actually really good in the movie. But enough about these movies. Oh, there was one other movie I want to talk about. We don't have a ton of time. We need to move on to Napoleon Dynamite. But I watched a movie on Netflix Instant called Cold Weather from 2010. It might have only come out in 2011 in a very limited release. And it's a movie, it's directed by a guy named Aaron Katz. And it's part of this, I don't know if you're familiar with this mumblecore movement. Sort of the Duplass brothers started it with movies like Baghead and the Puffy Chair, and it's, you know, super low budget, super indie, non-movie star actors, and it's just a lot of like everybody kind of has bedhead and rumpled clothes, and everybody I don't know how to exactly describe the movement, but you
I've
would
understood
know it if you
like
saw
every
it.
Fifth word you've said for the last
you
minute.
Would know it if you saw it. And
No, I'm sorry. I'm kidding. I have not heard of this movie until now. I won't
yeah.
have a whole lot to contribute to this.
Honestly, my point is to say, I wanted to talk about it because we've talked about a bunch of big movies and I wanted to spotlight maybe something smaller, okay. but I'm giving it a bad review. I'm saying don't see Cold Weather. It has an interesting.
But you are mentioning it, and that's half the battle for a movie like.
Well,
Cold
I just
Weather.
Feel like we shouldn't always just talk about, you know, what's playing at the multiplex. It has an interesting premise. It's just about this guy who is into mystery fiction, and he used to be into like forensic science. He went to school for that, but he's just kind of a slacker, as everyone in these mumblecore movies is, and it's just kind of living. I think in Portland with his sister, and he works overnight at like an ice factory, and a mystery sort of falls into his lap, and he becomes sort of this private eye. And again, super interesting on paper. That's what made me want to see the movie. The execution is lacking. Good first 45 minutes, and then you slowly begin to realize this is not going anywhere.
Better in concept than execution.
Because the execution, I mean, it's so laid back. And so kind of lazy that, like, within 45 minutes, you realize, like, oh, this is the movie. It's not changing from this.
yeah,
and I
yeah,
won't
yeah.
go too much further without spoiling it, but it's one of these movies that you get to the last scene and the credits start and you can't believe
This
is how they ended this movie. Deeply unsatisfying is what I will say. So I'm not sure you should check out Cold Weather. I didn't hate it, but there's better ways to fill 2 hours. Let's talk about a horrible way to fill 2 hours. And well, that is Jared Hess's Napoleon Dynamite from 2004. And this came to us via a listener suggestion. I just want to read the email. This is
from who? I want the goddamn name. I want the name.
Her name is Lisa.
She seems very nice.
Okay. She says, okay, the secret is out. I listened to the podcast, which, first of all, why is it a secret?
I don't support that mentality.
don't keep it a secret, everyone. Tell the world.
No.
Can you please F Napoleon Dynamite? I don't understand why everyone loves this movie, and I'm wondering if I'm just missing something, or if really a movie about a weird kid is not as cool as everyone says. Seriously, I have friends who yell at me because I don't think the movie is, one, genius, or two, funny. Which sucks, because when it came out, it totally looked like a movie that I should have loved. So,
lots to work with there.
Well, I'll just kind of open with the fact that, like, aside from it's a movie that I should have loved, my feelings towards Napoleon Dynamite are very much in line with what Lisa describes in her email. I try not to be this guy, but every couple of years, this definitely happens. Where a movie comes out and I'll see it and I'm fairly indifferent towards it. Maybe I lean negative, but I'm not passionately hating a movie, right? And then this sort of cult builds around it and everyone around me is talking about how great it is. And then I turn into just the guy who's being an asshole, and my opinion of the movie starts to change. I start to
solely on the way it's evolved in the culture.
Yeah. As more and more people are talking about how great it is, I just have to like dig in my heels and be like, no, it's not great at all. It's actually, bad. And that was me with Napoleon Dynamite. I saw it, I think, the day it opened, and not because I was dying to see it. I mean, the trailers were okay. Maybe that could be something. It had been sort of a success at a festival. But mostly I saw it because I was already at the theater, I think, seeing Spider-Man 2 for the second time, and it just worked out with the time. So I went in to see Napoleon Dynamite, and this fascinating phenomenon was happening around me. There were sort of these hipsters in the audience just laughing and cracking up at every single thing in the movie, and already I began to resent it. And again, fuck me. Like, who am I to say that people should or shouldn't like a movie? I understand I do a movie podcast where I basically say you should or shouldn't like this movie, but... if they're having a good time, what do I care, right? But I just felt like, and I have always felt like, Napoleon Dynamite is the kind of movie that attempts to reward you for liking it. That if you are laughing, it is trying to tell you that you're laughing because you get it, because you are somehow cool on a different wavelength. You are unique and offbeat, and you are an individual snowflake who can laugh at Napoleon Dynamite, and I call bullshit on that.
You are carrying
a
large frame of reference to this movie. We are of a similar mindset,
okay.
I think, about this. The way now I Wait, so hang on. Let me back up for 2 seconds. Let me get my thoughts in order. You, when you first saw it, you had not, like, the sort of critical mass of appreciation for the movie amongst this subset of, people had not yet, like, sort of gained traction. Is that correct?
I mean, I was annoyed at the hipsters in the audience, but, like, I just was pretty indifferent towards the movie. And it wasn't until people started coming out saying it's hilarious that I get upset, because I'm like, well, then now we're changing the definition of what's hilarious. If we're saying if we're saying Napoleon Dynamite is hilarious, we've agreed as a culture to change what funny means, and I have a problem with that.
I think I only saw it after all that stuff had started happening.
Yeah,
and to some extent, I mean, whether it should or shouldn't, that sort of colors what you think of it. And so I had heard how, you know, hilarious it was. And when I saw it, I didn't think so. I thought I was missing something. And actually, maybe I'm remembering this wrong, but I feel like it... Did it get re-released a couple times with, like, more stuff added?
I think one time, yeah. I think it came out...
Oh, maybe just once.
Yeah, they added on, like, an ending or something, like a post-credits scene or something.
I felt like I didn't see the right version of it, or that there was some other... I feel like I had all these friends. It came out, like, in the summer before I went to college, I think.
2004.
And when I got... Yeah. And when I got to, I didn't see it during that summer. When I got to college, I feel like people were talking about it a lot on the quad between the Hacky Sack games. I don't know. Like, and so it was just sort of pushed on me by a lot of that. And then they were like, I had people tell me, make sure you see the new version with all the other funny stuff.
It's one and when scene I walked after out the of, credits.
Yeah, when I – oh, it okay, well, whatever. Like, I didn't even think I stayed after the credits. No. But, like, when I walked out, I mean, I just felt very confused. And that brings me to watching it. We so often talk about this when we do movies on the show that we haven't – or that we have seen before. I remember, like I said, I remember seeing it, not getting why it was funny. But I actually remember sort of understanding why – why some people would like, I understood that there was an audience for it.
Yes.
Even if that audience didn't include me or people that I really sort of agree with generally, but I watched it this time. Gosh, I mean, I really had trouble finding a reason or something to point to say, yeah, I get the appeal. And I'm not doing it to be really contrarian either, because I was, I think, pretty indifferent generally. I just didn't think it was funny, but I thought, like, well, you know, it's an easy movie to watch. It doesn't really demand a whole lot from you. And maybe certain people just people who just deal in pregnant pauses and non sequiturs, this is like right in your wheelhouse. And so maybe you're into that. But when I watched it this time, first of all, you said a bad way to spend 2 hours. The movie's like an hour and a half long. And it like, if possible, it dragged for me. Seriously.
No, it, absolutely. It feels much longer.
It feels so long.
Yeah.
And because there's not really a whole lot of linear storytelling.
There is zero. And that's the problem. Like, we can debate, you know, humor all day and like, we don't find this funny, but other people do. But obviously that's subjective. But even I think as a movie, it fails because there's no story. There's no character development. Everything is one note over and over and over again.
Yeah. It's so weird to – the movie has clearly made a decision. Like, in some ways, I guess I'm going to caution and not use the word respect. I'm going to say that I guess I understand and kind of get the fact that Jared Hess, who directed it and also co-wrote, I think, right?
Yeah.
Or yeah. Excuse me. I guess, you know, he sort of set out to just make this movie that's not really a story as much as it is like a universe, right? It's just a thing where these people, I'm using that term sort of liberally, just sort of inhabit the world and interact, and it doesn't have to make a whole lot of sense, but that's clearly the tactic that you want to take. But that just, none of that really works without some sort of thread. I'm not the person who like says everything has to make sense, but I just, at some point, like, you need to have, even like the most absurd movies, particularly in the realm of comedy, and the movie that kept springing into my mind when I was watching this, of all things, was Wet Hot American Summer.
Okay.
Which is a movie that we both hold in very high regard, and I think a lot of people do. And that movie uses a lot of like absurd humor and things that are kind of on their face random, but like actually from a storytelling perspective, like that movie, like when you take, you know, not even a film class, a English class about like how to tell a story and the way and the way a story goes in an arc, you know, it rises and falls, there's a climax or whatever. What Hot American Summer has that? You can say that you think it's stupid or that it's not funny to you, and like you said, humor is completely objective. But there is very clearly something that happens. There's a climax of events. There's a denouement. You know,
there's a ton of jokes. You know, Napoleon Dynamite doesn't even have jokes, but like Wet Hot American Summer has jokes. And if you don't find them funny, okay. But like you said, there's sort of a plot. There's a through line. There are multiple characters that like hopefully you care a little bit about. The movie is, you know, Wet Hot American Summer, it can function as a parody of sort of summer camp movies from the late 70s and early 80s. I think it functions.
And you can bring that to it.
Yeah. Right. And I think it also exists as almost like a parable about sort of the loss of innocence transitioning from the late 70s into the early 80s. Maybe that's an argument for another show. But I think there's all these things going on in Wet Hot American Summer that you could point to where even if you don't think the jokes are funny, you can say, well, it's still a movie, which Napoleon Dynamite think is.
The climax of Napoleon Dynamite is Napoleon Dynamite dances. That doesn't do it for me. I'm sorry. Like, I mean, that just doesn't do it for me.
Well, and I guess the point is like suddenly he's won acceptance from his high school, you know, because he's been this outsider for the whole movie. But like, you can't just turn on a dime and say now they like him and then credits.
Because he danced. Like, that doesn't make any sense.
And guess what? As I was rewatching, this was the first time I've seen it since the day I saw it in 2004, since the day it opened. I think even the dance, which is one of those things that, you know, people film themselves doing and they put it up on YouTube and everyone thinks they're hilarious for doing the Napoleon Dynamite dance. I think even the dance, I think they blow that because for that to work, I think that he really needed to shoot that in one take and it's all cut up.
It's so funny that you say that because that is what occurred to me as well. And like you and I are firmly on record, I think, if not on the podcast, certainly in our, you know, friendly discussions, like the two things that don't work in comedy are funny names and funny dances. Right. Well, there's a lot that those aren't the only two things, but like, you know,
this movie has both.
But yeah. This movie has both, and the funny dancing, like even for a person like me who doesn't who considers that to be sort of a comedy cheat, even that could be a lot funnier on its face.
Right.
I mean, it has to be you have to do it in a certain way that makes it sort of a spectacle, and I guess like it could be funny if you conceive it to be like, you know, something that you were watching as though you were in that high school auditorium watching this nerdy kid sort of transcend all you think of him before your eyes. But yeah, when you start like cutting away and doing, you know, all these other things, like then, you know, I feel like I'm in a movie and like, I feel like this is a thing that's sort of edited to try and make me laugh.
Right.
And it wasn't making me laugh anyway.
Well, and we're supposed to find it funny.
That's beside the point. But
I guess we're supposed to find it funny because like, oh, it's Napoleon Dynamite dancing. And isn't everything he does funny? And the movie has just this amazingly sort of self-satisfied attitude where, you know, most comedies, their goal is like, we want to make you laugh. We will fucking bend over back. Even the worst Ben Stiller movie, like, is desperately trying to make you laugh. Sometimes too much, and then you push back against that. Like, oh God, you're trying way too hard to make me laugh, and you pick up on that. But like, most comedies want to make you laugh. Napoleon Dynamite doesn't, like, is not necessarily trying to make you laugh because it already has the attitude of, like, isn't this funny? Isn't what we're doing funny? He has a llama, and isn't that funny? And he draws these weird animals, and he has nunchucks. It's like they sat down and made a list of, like, what are weird, offbeat things that we could all just, we could cram all of this them into a movie. And Jared Hess obviously has an aesthetic. I think it's a shitty aesthetic, but he has one. And it's like sort of early 80s tackiness. And it's all throughout Napoleon Dynamite.
It's just sort of like a rural mediocrity. That's what everybody's bringing into my mind.
Shops at a flea market, and aren't the clothes funny? And Tina Majorino even has a side ponytail, because that's funny, right? A normal person, no, doesn't have a side ponytail after, 1984. But isn't it funny that she does? Doesn't that look so silly and stupid? And are we supposed to pity these people?
She also has
them?
If I can interject, she also has the map to dry land on her back. Sorry.
Yeah. And they all just have terrible dreams, and so apparently we're supposed to pity them and laugh at them. So who are we rooting for? I don't need every character in a movie to be likable, because Napoleon Dynamite is actively unlikable. And I don't have a problem with an unlikable protagonist, but I have to care about what he's doing. I have to find him interesting. Even if I don't like him, I still have to care about what happens to him, and there's none of that in this movie. Again, maybe I sound like a dinosaur, because there's a whole generation of people whose sense of humor, and I know this because my wife is a teacher, and her she teaches high school, and her students have this same shitty attitude about comedy, where it's like, because I say monkeys, or because I make something with ninjas, it's automatically funny. And it's like, there's no context for it. There's no joke. It's just like, ninjas. Isn't that funny? Aren't you impressed with the fact that I said ninjas? And Napoleon Dynamite is the movie for these people, because it just presents all of these disparate, like, out of context things and throws them in one sucky, jokeless movie, and then people eat it up and people love it. I don't know if it's the kind of thing where it's like it's reflecting that shitty sense of humor and so people find it funny, or if it's shaping that shitty sense of humor. You know what I mean? It's like a chicken egg thing.
Chicken and the egg. It's a, whether you're going to drink all the eggs out of one huge jar, or if you're just going to pull the chickens. There were so many things that I'm sorry to get off your point. You're speaking very eloquently about like what drives comedy in society and all these things.
Because the movie angers me at a theoretical level. It does. I don't know. Sorry, go ahead.
Like the origins of what makes people laugh.
Yeah.
I those are all really good points, and I want to like sort of backtrack to what you said. You made a lot of points there, and I want to address one thing in particular when you were talking about likability. I agree with you that likability in terms of like characters in a movie is a little bit overrated as a storytelling device. You don't necessarily have to like everyone on screen, but like relate to them. Certainly not relate to them. You don't have to do that. But yeah, I mean, you have to have something invested in what will happen to them.
Right.
I want to say one thing that I had sort of blocked out. I think I remember like, If I had laughed at anything the first time I saw it, I mean, I think I probably laughed at, like, I think I thought, like, Uncle Rico was, like, the funniest character or something. This is when I was 18. Whatever. But that was just my memory. I had totally blocked out the fact that in the latter third of the movie or something, on top of being unfunny, the thing crosses over into a point where Uncle Rico starts handing out breast enlargement to flyers to like young girls at a point. And it's like, what, we've transcended like from unfunny and boring to like borderline offensive. And I'm not like a fucking Quaker over here. Like I'm not like looking for things to be offended by. Like this is just, there's just something to be said for a movie that accomplishes nothing and then like has the audacity to like do
right. Well, the movie hasn't
really sort of perverse with like with no repercussions for the character.
Right.
It's like fine.
The movie hasn't earned that joke. It can't get away with that because it hasn't given you anything that could build to that joke. It couldn't think of anything else.
I know. Ugh.
But he has a funny toupee on, and isn't that funny?
I know.
Everyone has to be funny to look at and have a funny name. And Napoleon Dynamite's brother has to have a funny way of talking also, and has to be,
I mean, they all have funny ways of
a
talking.
Loser who's like studying cage fighting. And it's, I'll tell you what, the only thing that I can take away from Napoleon Dynamite is the fact that, like, Jared Hess was subsequently revealed to be sort of a one-trick hack and has tried to make this movie a few more times. You made Nacho Libre, which no one likes, and a movie called Gentlemen Broncos, which have you ever seen Gentlemen Broncos?
I have seen Gentlemen Broncos, yeah.
It's not good, and it has a lot of the same problems as Napoleon Dynamite, although when I saw the trailer, I actually was like, there might be something there. Because it was kind of
got a guy from Flight of the Conchords in it.
Yeah, right. It's got Jemaine Clement, and it was kind of goofing on fantasy and science fiction, like novels.
There seems to be a little more there in terms of, like, even just from a thematic standpoint.
Like, yeah, there's like a sort of a story, you know, which there's not in Napoleon Dynamite. And the Jemaine Clement character is a good sort of comic creation. The movie doesn't do anything with him, and again, gets bogged down in all this. This white trash tackiness that apparently is funny, but really it's just sad. And it's like, I don't know. It's like this dime store version of Wes Anderson. Like, I don't even know.
Yeah, yeah.
It really bothers. And it's very stylized, but it's like, it's a bad style. And his movies have subsequently, you know, tanked, and he's never sort of returned to the success of Napoleon Dynamite, which is why I guess we shouldn't be surprised that they're making it into a cartoon to premiere sometime next year. And you know what? Maybe it's the kind of thing that will work better as a cartoon because the characters are so one-dimensional. And as you said, it doesn't tell a story. It just creates a universe in which these people inhabit. Well, that's what a cartoon would do. You know, it is every week we hang out with them for 20 minutes in this universe, but it doesn't have to tell specific stories. I don't know. I won't be watching it because I don't find his sense of humor funny. But I think it probably will function better as a cartoon than as a movie.
I didn't know that until you just said that. But my first thought was that, yeah, that might work. My second thought is, what is the audience for that? Is it just, I mean, it's people who like the movie, right? Which are a lot of people.
I think it's a movie that continues to be discovered also. Like, I don't think it's a movie that just captured this one group of people in 2004 and went away. Like, I think new generations discover it and find it funny. Because I think, you know, there are things about it that speak to a 12-year-old, especially a 12-year-old in 2011 who thinks it's funny just to say ninjas or, like, have a pet llama. Because a llama is the last animal you would expect to have as a pet. Therefore, it's funny.
Did you laugh one time during Napoleon Dynamite?
No. I don't remember laughing in 2004. Maybe I did. Today I did not. Today I was actually even looking for, like, the presence of a joke that wasn't just, isn't this weird? Isn't that hair funny? There's a scene where they're on a bike ramp, and Pedro goes over the bike ramp, and he doesn't go very high, but the characters are so sad and pathetic that they're impressed by the fact that he got about 5 inches of air, and isn't that funny? And then in the next shot, Napoleon Dynamite goes over the ramp and it breaks and he, like, racks his balls. And it's not funny, but it's a sight gag. It's a joke. I mean, if that's how far we're lowering the bar, like, let's give the Statue of Liberty to the giant monkeys right now. But that was, like, the one time that I could...
Nice callback.
Thank you. That was one of the only instances I could think of where it was like, oh, they attempted a setup and a joke as opposed to just a non-contextual reference to something offbeat.
I laughed one time.
Okay.
I was as surprised as anybody. Although I actually want to address the sight gag that you just referenced.
Mm-hmm.
When one thing that really bothered me, like, I remember that scene sticking out in my head from the first time I saw it. I guess it's sort of, I'm going to use the word iconic in the most awful way that anyone's ever used it. But that did stick out to me from this movie. In that sense, you could say it was iconic. But when I watched it this time, I noticed, like, when they show Pedro jumping over the ramp, and then they cut a few seconds later and they show Napoleon about to jump over the ramp, there is very clearly something missing from the bottom of the ramp. Like, and then it breaks. It's so weird. It stuck out to me. Anyway, It pulled the curtain from behind the filmmaking process, you know?
I have to interject real quick. This is totally off topic. I was recently watching the first few minutes of Casino, you know, in the opening shot.
Oh, God.
Do you know what I'm going to say? Yeah. De Niro sits in the car. I had never seen...
De Niro dummy. Oh, my God. Yes.
I had never seen it. The moment where I noticed it, and I was like, I will never be able to look at this the same way again. I'm ruined for that scene forever.
Oh, yeah. That happened to me, I think, like probably the second time I watched Casino. Okay. And it's noticeable.
Oh,
and it's sort of in that vein, not as egregious, because it's like a human being
right. That
is then clearly not a human being. But very good analogy.
Yeah.
The one time, and I say this with the full risk of knowing that I'm on record as liking Wild Wild West and that I don't want to put forward these outrageous opinions, I did happen to chuckle at Diedrich Bader's line as the dojo master,
right?
Or whatever.
Because it's funny. Dojo, cage fighting. It's all funny.
No, stop. No, stop. Just wait.
I'm not criticizing you. I'm annoyed at all of the elements that the movie puts in there.
It is to that. Yeah, of course it's to that.
It's still
to that point.
Yeah.
In his like promotional video that he runs, he does say... Oh, Jesus. He does say something about having the, you know, if you use his program or whatever, that you will have the strength of a grizzly, the reflexes of a cobra, and the wisdom of a man. Which got a chuckle out of me, more from delivery than actual, I think that is the one scene that comes close to working for me.
Yeah.
I think it would play well as some sort of like sketch on a sketch show, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, I was desperately trying to find something somewhat nice to say, and that is I have to say I did laugh one time, and that was it.
Yeah. I will say I don't even necessarily think that like the character of Napoleon Dynamite is the worst comic creation. I think there's something there. This really sort of odd, geeky guy who's constantly just still defiant and like kind of a dick, besides the fact that like the whole world has rejected him, that he's still just kind of I don't think that's a horrible idea. I just think A, the character is super one note and doesn't go anywhere. And B, I don't think he should be surrounded. I don't think he should exist in a world that's just as crazy as he is. He needs to be in a different environment to really work. I also don't know that he can carry his own movie, but like, I think there's something to the character. I don't think it works. And I don't even, John Heder plays the part fine. Again, it's alarmingly repetitive and one note. But it's interesting to see that, you know, everybody sort of thought he would go on to kind of have this big career, and that quickly stalled. He's been in a handful of things. He had a couple scenes in a bad romantic comedy called Just Like Heaven. And then he was in The Benchwarmers with David Spade and Rob Schneider. And probably his best movie, Blades of Glory, opposite Will Ferrell. But again, that movie, which I think is really funny... I think that movie is very funny in spite of John Heder. I think,
if
they would have cast that role with someone who's, I don't know, as funny as Will Ferrell, this could have been a classic. Instead, Will Ferrell has to do all the heavy lifting because John Heder is a vacuum of charisma. So, again, I don't take satisfaction in the failure of others, but, like, I do feel somewhat vindicated that, like...
I feel like you kind of do, though.
Sometimes I do, just only sometimes. But like, you know, if my big my big complaint about Napoleon Dynamite was sort of like this Emperor Has No Clothes idea that people were not listening to me. Soylent Green is made of people. I'm shouting. The failure of Jared Hess and John Heder's acting career at least sort of validates that, like, okay, other people figured it out too. Or maybe it's just, no, we only want to see you guys do Napoleon Dynamite, you know?
Yeah. Do you know if he's going to do the voice of Napoleon?
He is, yeah, I think.
Oh,
I think,
good, because I can't imagine he would have a whole lot else going on.
Yeah. Right. I think everybody is sort of returning, because, again, this was the best they all had it. Although Efrain Ramirez did appear in both Crank movies, which I prefer vastly to Napoleon Dynamite. You know, I've talked before, I think, on the podcast. I'm not a fan of, like, watching things sort of ironically. I'm not a fan of irony in that sort of self-satisfied way where you just put fucking air quotes around everything. And that's this whole movie to me. This whole movie is people being ironic, and aren't we, because it doesn't have affection for these people. If it did, I would feel differently about it, but I think the movie looks down on everyone in it. And so we are meant to be laughing at them. We're not supposed to like them, but also find them funny. You know what I mean? We just sort of pity them, and they're nerds, and they're weird, and they're lame, and they're freaks. And isn't that hilarious? And I don't think it is.
No. Yeah. I don't have a problem with, like, you know, the use of irony for comedy's sake, but I feel like in a scenario like that, like, you have to have a target, you know, you have to be sort of, I don't know if you have to necessarily be doing.
Yeah. I guess if I could clarify, like, I'm not opposed to irony in comedy, but maybe it's what you said, that you need a target, because I don't think everything can be a target, and that's Napoleon Dynamite.
Right.
It's just everything is lame and weird and funny because we say it is, and that's what I reject, because I would like to be the person who decides what's funny. I don't need guys telling me.
It's really sort of weird, just because, again, my mind just keeps sort of drifting back to Wet Hot American Summer, which is a far superior movie. And it feels like, but as much as I love that movie, I feel like people who make comedy in the subsequent, 10 years since that movie came out, have sort of taken incorrect lessons from that movie. I'm not trying to say that Jared Hess, like, saw Wet Hot American Summer and, like, thought about Napoleon Dynamite, but I'm just saying that, like I said before, there are certain things where you just sort of decide that there are certain elements that on their face are funny without any context or anything. Like, you know, Wet Hot American Summer has a scene with a talking can of mixed vegetables. And that is presented without a whole lot of context, other than the fact that it's sort of lampooning that he happens to talk to a Vietnam veteran, and it lampoons a lot of, like, tropes about Vietnam veterans having crazy visions, and that's where the joke comes from. But I feel like people who maybe saw that just sort of thought it was funny to have a talking can of vegetables, in the way that it's sort of funny to have a kid who draws pictures of animals that don't exist. Am I reaching too much? I don't know why Wet Hot American Summer kept cropping up in my head.
Yeah.
Because I love that movie, and it's better than this movie by, you know, tenfold and all that. But
I agree. I and maybe it's just because it's an example of a comedy that is to a very specific taste.
Yeah.
And that would, I think, alienate anybody who doesn't have that taste. I don't think you can be, like, indifferent towards Wet Hot American Summer. Either you think it's very funny, or you don't understand what the fuck everyone is laughing at. And Napoleon Dynamite, to me, is kind of the same way. And maybe I'm just such a snob that I feel like not only am I left wondering what everyone's laughing at, but I feel like they're wrong to be laughing, because I just want to say there's no joke here. You know, it's that whole Family Guy thing where it's like, but there's no joke. There's just a reference. You can't just make a reference and have that be funny. You have to be commenting on something. But it's just this empty reference. And that's sort of what Napoleon Dynamite is. It's not referential in that way, but it's just these sort of absurd elements without any context or any point of view. You know, it's, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't like the movie, is what I'm saying.
And that's going to be it, everybody. We don't like the movie. No.
That pretty much
can
is
I ask
it.
You this?
Yeah.
I mean, that's pretty much that's pretty much where we're arriving. No. Let me ask you this. You put a review on the F This Movie Facebook page, and I think we probably tweeted it or something too. Your review of Bucky Larson, Born to Be a Star.
Bucky Larson, Born to Be a Star? Sure.
Basically, what I'm trying to ask you is, do you think Napoleon Dynamite is better or worse than that movie?
Yikes. Gosh.
I feel like it might be a little bit better, and I haven't even seen
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, again, there's pluses and minuses, because Bucky Larson, I think, is trying to make you laugh instead of just assuming that it's funny. It's just trying to make you laugh with things that are horrible. And the character is equally unpleasant.
Yeah.
But it's so badly made, technically, and it's so ugly in so many ways. Yeah, if I had to watch one again, I would watch Napoleon Dynamite.
Yeah.
Because at least it does, as you said, sort of create... There's a universe. There's sort of a consistent aesthetic. Even though I don't like it, I feel like a choice was made. And that is not the case with Bucky Larson.
Okay. I was just curious, just because I remember reading that, and everybody should read it if you haven't already.
Thank you. Napoleon Dynamite, slightly better than the worst movie of this year.
Boom. Put that on the when they reissue Napoleon Dynamite in 2014 for the 10th anniversary Blu-ray. They'll put that on the box.
It's going to happen too. Here's a quick story that I think I got from like the Wikipedia page, and then we'll wrap up. Supposedly Napoleon Dynamite, I guess, comes from an Elvis Costello song. It's the song is not called Napoleon Dynamite, I don't think, but it's part of the lyric. And when asked about that, I believe Jared Hess said, like, really? I've never heard that. I'm unaware of that. Like, really? Really, guy? How did you put your movie out into theaters not expecting someone to call you out on the fact? I don't think two people came up with the name Napoleon Dynamite. I don't think.
No, I don't think so.
All right. Well, thank you for being on the show. Thank you to Lisa for the email. And remember, if you guys have a movie that you would like us to discuss... We try and get to them, you know. We have ideas for shows that we want to do, so we don't just do listener
suggestions. Clearly, we're not above anything. We just talked about Napoleon Dynamite for a while.
So if you guys do have ideas for shows, email us at fthismoviepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you very much, Alex.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm glad I could make a triumphant return.
To talk about Napoleon Dynamite, no less. Do you have anything you want to say to take us out?
My mom did not go to college.